Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Will Smith at the Oscars, unhinged. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, the Arthur Ashe of alliteration, the Andre Agassi of assonance, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing okay, but you know, Mike, I feel I just might mail this one in. I've had a couple of good podcasts in a row, some solid jokes, so I think I might just take this one off. Kind of like the Winnipeg Jets. Win a couple of games and make it look like you're going to do something interesting, and then drop a lackluster performance that only Christian Vesalainen would like.
I like the parting shot at Vesalainen. Well done. I was bated breath. I'm like, there's something more coming. Vaughn's going to drop the hammer. That was really good.
Well, before we go further, I just want to send a quick shout out to some of my work colleagues, especially Matt Rogers, who shared something very nice with me recently on a staff call. He said, I don't really follow the Jets, but I really like listening to your podcast. So a big shout out to Matt, Jeff Legault, who also listens, and Brian Falk for being loyal listeners. Part of an emerging group of followers I like to call Lounge Lizards.
I'm sure they'll all get t-shirts printed on.
And I can arrange that.
I also think, giving our podcast numbers, that my friends and family no longer listen, and that you're gaining listeners and I'm losing them. But that sounds about right. All right, let's do check-in time. I got in one little fight and my mom got scared and said, you're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air. All right, so six games since our last one. Jets went 4-2. Vaughn, your intro there kind of summed it up nicely. Any momentum we gain in the short term is quickly lost in the, I guess, in the overall long game, which is a playoff push. I thought we had some nice wins in there, some, you know, austerity wins in OT the past couple games, mm-hmm. and then we just stunk the place out against the Senators, a team we should almost always beat. And the Bruins game to start us off wasn't very great in any respect. And so it's tough not to sound like a broken record sometimes, but it's just the inconsistency. It goes without saying that our playoff chances would obviously we'd be in a much better position if we could just tie up some loose ends and beat the teams we're supposed to beat, and even go just over 500, the teams mm-hmm. that you would naturally expect that we would have a tougher time with, but we can't even seem to do that sometimes.
Yeah, and like you alluded to, it's more than just the outcomes. It's been the process that's kind of been confounding.
Yeah.
And in this recent spate of games, you know, the record has been very good, buoyed by two overtime wins, which haven't come easily for the Jets this year. But to these two recent overtime wins put the record to 4-2, just as you mentioned, over the six games. Could easily have been 2-4. But in none of those games can we really look to one and say that was a solid game. Yes, the Jets defeated Vegas.
Even the Golden, that one. That was the once in this year Hellebuck game that we had come to expect three or four times a year, and this was the first one. Great, good timing, but not an overall good performance.
No, not at all. And in my notes for that game, you know, I said we shouldn't apologize. Like, we were kind of owed one of those. You know, Helly has that in him, and he stepped up at a really good time and against a really good opponent, in the sense that that was an opponent we needed to defeat. And he rose to the occasion, and good goalies do that, and he's that guy.
Yeah.
But the rest of the team around him wasn't very good. I thought the team was sloppy in Chicago. I thought they were listless against Boston and Ottawa. I thought they were better against Columbus. Now, there's naturally going to be some energy in the building with the return of Patrick Laine and the other two guys. But, you know, I think that there still wasn't a lot of there in that game. Now, the Jets were still outshot that game.
Yeah.
They were outchanced in the high but they did win the expected goal. So it was a bit of a it was a tight game, and I really thought that they really didn't want Patrick Laine to score. And it was certainly nice to see Ehlers score in overtime. Against Arizona, let's give thanks to my kids. I took both my kids to that game. Again, the Jets win.
Are you undefeated when you bring your kids?
Well, it's only been two games, but yeah.
Anecdotally, yeah. Yes.
Yes, yes. So we are building building some data. Yes, we are building some data. Perhaps they are the magic that the Jets need in order to. Although the two games they went to were very different. I think they won the first game 7-4. I can't remember who it was against.
It was the boat race, the first one. Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, this one was quite different. Although I was very happy to see Mark Scheifele score a couple goals. But overall, you know, the Jets were outshot in five of the six games. They were out high danger chance in five of the six games, and they were in terms of expected goals, they were defeated by their opponents in that aspect of the measuring the game in four of the six games. So this is not something, you know. I was reading earlier today, Mike, I know you've been working 16 hours a day. I've been minding the kids on spring break vacation, so I have a little bit more time. But Mike McIntyre came out and said something that the Jets are the number one team in the league since February 27th. They have the most wins.
10-4-1 in their last 15.
Something like that, yeah. Yep. And okay, it's kudos to them. But, you know, I'm still about the process. This team doesn't look like a playoff team. They get in trouble in their own zone for extended periods of time. I'm constantly worried about Neil Pionk and Brendan Dillon. But on the upside, again, yes, it was Arizona. Return to the lineup of Ville Heinola looked very good.
He did look solid.
I really think so. So, again, as a collection of games, there was a lot to cheer for, but not a lot to feel great about. Like short-term gain for long-term pain, almost.
Yeah, and there was, you know, just real quick in terms of playoff aspirations, I think we have about six games versus non-playoff teams and nine versus playoff teams. So the rudimentary math is that, you know, if we go 6-0 versus non-playoff teams, which we have not done and traditionally cannot do, and then go 500 against the playoff teams, we'll duplicate sort of the 10-4 and run record that we just rattled off. And that puts us around 95, 96 points and gives us a relatively decent shot at the playoffs. That's not including if Dallas or Vancouver or Vegas, like if anybody goes on a bit of a run, then we're just basically out no matter what. But it is it's heartening that we're still in it. And I'm not going to lie. I enjoy these games. I enjoy the fact that there are stakes. But B, you're absolutely right that over these past six games, there wasn't one game where I'm like, okay, well, if we play like that for 60 minutes,
right,
we're going to be okay, or our chances are good. Like Money Puck has a, have you seen this? It's a deserved a win-o-meter, and it's based on expected goals. And you know, the Hawks was 50-50. We were barely over 50 in the Golden Knights game, and we got trounced by the Senators. And it's something where we're winning these games, and I people probably get sick of me saying it, but I think some of this is a bit of a regression to the mean. We were, in my opinion, a tad puck unlucky, some unlucky goaltending, and we're winning these games now instead of losing them. And, it, you know, because luck is just like that, it regresses to a mean, and I think we're benefiting from that. What will happen in the last 15 games, who knows? But it's more of a roller coaster than sort of a change in tide, rather than we figured a bunch of things out and we're really good 5-on-5 and we're clicking on all cylinders. So we'll see what happens. The only other, I did find it funny, the Liney being back, I miss him and I miss watching him play, and he's just a marvel to watch. Albeit you can see when you're not cheering for him, some of the defensive tendencies and position tendencies are still to be desired. But I love the fact that we did a three-person tribute.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Jets. It's the polite thing to do. But I would, you know, do the other two guys and then have a separate one for Laine. I don't think any of the other two guys are going to be... Like, Roslovic looked like he could not have cared less that we acknowledge him. Like, he couldn't get out of here fast enough. So who cares about him? It was just one of those things. It's like, give Laine at least 2 minutes. I know it's a nitpicky thing, but it kind of bothered me that we lumped it all together. And Laine seemed genuinely touched, so I think it would have meant more to him anyway. Anyway, that's silliness, but I do agree overall that we're not... This 10-4-1 is a bit of a mirage to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that I also felt it was a little weird what they did with Liney and not singling him out. But you can just see how, you know, you get a bunch of people in a room and in a bit of a committee, and they can talk themselves out of anything or into anything kind of thing, in the sense that, you know, well, what about this and what about that? And we don't want to piss off Pierre-Luc Dubois. We don't want to show, you know. So I can see that there's these prickly points all around it. And they just arrived at the decision that would cause the least damage if it went wrong.
Well, you know, everyone knows the best thinking comes in a committee. And when you don't want to ruffle feathers, that's when you get the best decisions. Anyway, I agree. I think that's exactly what happened.
One thing I want to get your opinion on, because it builds on a lot of what you're talking about before we move forward, is you know, the team seems to be in a bit of a state of flux right now. And I think what you've seen recently the breakup of Wheeler and Shifley.
Sorry, George. I don't understand. Things were going so great. What happened? Something must have happened.
The moving Ehlers and Shifley together. And, you know, there's been certain times that I think they're really starting to look to play off each other. I think more than I've seen ever before that there's a willingness between those two guys to service one another on the ice. And there was a couple times even looking at them on the bench recently after a goal one of them have scored, they're chatting with each other, and there was some real laughter and some budding chemistry there. Now, I'm not suggesting these guys don't get along off the ice, but there hasn't been a lot of on-ice chemistry. It looks like my point is, I think we're still figuring out who we are in our top six. We're in a state of flux, and part of that might be grafting together Shifley and Ehlers and moving Wheeler somewhere else. So that is a huge paradigm shift for the Jets. And I just, you know, I'm a big guy on body language, and I really liked some of the body language I've seen between Ehlers and Shifley in the obviously the tremendously limited opportunity we get to see those two
small sample size,
interact in that way. But I'm just wondering, how are you taking a look at how the top six have been managed? Because we've seen sort of a drop off of PLD. You know, Connor has stayed productive, but his play hasn't been
as consistent and good defensively. Yeah. I think Ehlers and Shifley together, I think that's the right move. And we have to be, I mean, at least I have to be honest and consistent in that I think both you and I have been very clear throughout that Wheeler and Shifley together just doesn't work anymore and changes need to be made. And they've made a change. So first off, kudos, right? Yeah. Like this, for whatever the underlying reason is and whether this is short term or long term, a change has been made, and I appreciate that. Hanel is in. I appreciate that. I think that's a smart move. I think playoff push or not, I think he should have been playing the whole year, but he can't retroactively change that. But no. I like Ehlers is, I think, sometimes too tricky with. And as much as hard as I am on Mark Shifley, defensively, I think he's sometimes difficult to play with. Offensively, I think he would be a dream to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's the perfect offensive partner for Ehlers, because he's consistent, he's a great passer, he's got a brilliant mind for the game, and I think he can fill in holes and get to places and figure players out and adapt to their game, because Ehlers has one speed and one way of playing, and you kind of have to adapt to him. And I think others in the past haven't been able to do that. And I think out of all our top six forwards, Shifley's in the best position to do that. So I like it. Keep it going.
Ehlers on the ice is like Mike Guthrie in the boardroom, full steam ahead. All right. So,
with no direction.
Often crashing into the boards.
Yeah.
And injuring those around him.
detrimental to others. There we go.
Is there Brian Little in your organization? Anyways. Okay, so I did a What Did We Learn This Week.
Okay, let's do it.
We'll go to it. Mike, I got to tell you, it's not as funny this week, but I'm just following the...
Okay,
you know,
don't call your shots there, Chris Rock.
I'm just following my own artistic process. I'm a podcast artist, which is one step below being a sandwich artist, so...
Go, okay, Jared.
So what did we learn this week? Craig Button doesn't agree with my previous take on the Jets coaching staff. I don't know if you saw this, Mike, and he's right, by the way. He really lit into the
I did
the
see Jets. That.
Yeah, yeah. To me, there's been some progress in some areas, but as Button suggested in his recent piece on TSN, there remain some fundamental problems, such as defensive zone systems, which remain completely dysfunctional by my standard, and I completely agree with that.
The
The 5-on-5 play is also markedly worse under Lowry than it was under Maurice. It may be beyond the mandate of an interim coach to address some of these things, but you know, I in our previous podcast, I know I kind of came out and I gave some of the coaching staff some kudos, just as we've tipped our hat on a very small level to them already on this podcast. There is a lot of work that remains to be done. Whether the guy in place right now has the mandate to do it. But I thought it was worth acknowledging that, you know, we still recognize that, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done with this team systematically and from a coaching perspective before they're right. But I think that's something we saw this week for sure.
Yeah, and I was a bit shocked because saying the same things as I somewhat did as Craig Button makes me reevaluate my process. And it's like I'm one step away from agreeing with Kevin Sawyer. So I might need to come back and retool the whole thing.
Another thing we learned this week, Mike, is you and I, we might be decent analysts about things that have actually taken place, but we are not Nostradamus. Boy, were we wrong with our trade deadline. We said Cop.
I wondered if you're going to bring this up. We were
Cop
wrong.
Wouldn't get traded. Woo! Because we thought he had a concussion and no one was going to touch him. But, oh, boy, we're going to get this big haul for Stastny. Well, we didn't quite say that, but we were a little bit more bullish on Stastny getting traded and quite bearish on Kopp. And, boy, the reverse really occurred. So
takes didn't age well.
Yeah, we should probably henceforth just let things happen and talk about them instead of trying to predict things. So. All right, so the next thing we learned this week is, with the exception of one excellent game, but as the season overall, Hellebuck seems to be suffering from the curse of the bobblehead. Now, this is something, because I have all the bobbleheads,
oh, there you go.
At it, is like, wow, like, you know, Laine is no longer with the team. Pavlik, on his bobblehead night, he was pulled. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Brian Little has,
he's probably
a bobblehead.
Drunk,
yeah. Yeah, it's true. Not Brian Little we're talking about.
No, not Brian Little. Pavlik, sorry.
Brian Little has a bobblehead. Bufflin has a bobblehead. Wheeler, as soon as he got a bobblehead, it wasn't long after that, his play just, there's a few of them are still, you know, playing relatively well. But, you know, as soon as you get your bobblehead, let's hope that Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois never get one. So
send that to Jay Fresh. That's scientific.
Very scientific. I did a lot of deep dive research on that. Spreadsheets and pivot tables and
chalk on glass.
And the last thing we learned at the trade deadline was the non-trade of Paul Stastny. It is rather apparent that Blake Wheeler still has some calling some of the shots around here, because that was one.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I think that line was playing pretty well up until the trade deadline, and Sheveldayoff said, you know, we weren't even taking calls about him, and you could have read that one of two ways, and that we're not talking about him. You could read it like no one was calling about him, but they weren't shopping him around either.
No, I agree.
Okay, so Mac WAC Continuum, should we move on to, let's get an assessment of the week?
Let's go, Return of the Mac. All right, on the patented WAC to Mac Continuum, where do you have these six games?
Well, for me, Mike, WAC scoring a 1, Mac scoring a 10, and of course, Mac being defined as ultra pimp. I had it as a 6.5. I did revise this up with the two wins recently. We had decided to record a little earlier this week, and that got pushed a little bit. So the Jets were able to squeeze in an additional win into the the assessment window. As we've said, their play wasn't very good. As I alluded to earlier, they were outshot in five of the six games. They gave up more chances in the high danger area. The penalty kill has started to fall apart a little bit.
Yeah.
They've started to look vulnerable there. The team overall just doesn't look like a playoff team. And even if we were to get there, it might be a very painful 7 or 8 days.
It's a catch 22, right? Like, I'd like to make it, but I have a feeling that we would get destroyed. I also don't want to get, that Montreal series was heartbreaking.
It wasn't fun.
And I think that we would suffer a similar fate. And I'm not sure it's worth it just for that.
Well, if we were to make the playoffs, it's like, well, congratulations, here you go, here's Colorado Avalanche. So, where we are right now, it's statistically improbable, just like me getting promoted at work. So what did you have the week as? I had it 6.5. You got it as a what?
A 6. Had it a steady 6. I got a little overzealous on our last one. I was listening to it again. I think I overshot a bit, but I had it at a 7 after the Coyotes game, just record alone, but for the exact same reasons. I was like, we didn't have a lot of great wins in here, and even some of the game, like the Ottawa game, was just gut-wrenching, and that took it down a notch. So, again, optimistic but skeptical at the same time.
I'm pretty sure I was at the Ottawa game, and I liked it so little, I've forgotten that I was there. I'm pretty sure I went to that game.
All right. Should we do the pre-boarding announcements?
Let's go.
All right. Take us out with First Class.
Okay. First Class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing First Class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I'm putting into First Class this week a pair.
Oh.
A pair of defensemen. Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello.
Yeah.
I have been impressed with their play. Full credit. Again, we're contradicting ourselves a little bit here. Good on the coaching staff in putting them and keeping them together. The other two units have been a little bit of a tire fire, and
we'll get to that.
I just think that this pair works. They complement one another. They elevate each other's game, and I think that they're more than the sum of the parts when they play together. And they've been solid for a long time, and they're truly proven that they're deserving to be our top pair. I think that, work needs to be done on the other pair, but they give my high blood pressure goes down a little bit when they're on the ice, and I appreciate that. So Josh Morrissey, Dylan DeMello, grab your pillows, come up to First Class. You can order off the
adjoining
menu
seats
tonight.
Yeah.
Adjoining seats. Yes. Who do you got, Mike?
I got my boy, Nick Ehlers. He's been El Fuego since he's returned from injury. And again, I recognize that there are some very costly giveaways, and he'll make two or three seemingly boneheaded plays. And, at least he's pretty open and honest when he does, if they lead to good scoring chances for the other team. But he's such a driver of play, and he can do things and set plays up, and, all of his shots, he's 5 to 7 shots a game. Some of them I don't like. He's got a bit of an Evander Kane aspect to him where he kind of shoots from everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I think he makes everyone on the ice better. His advanced stats are top in the Jets. And it just a much needed infusion of energy and offensive prowess that was sorely missed. And so he's up with the RD boys.
Well chosen. He is a special player. We should enjoy every single game he
before
plays
we trade
the Winnipeg
him.
Jets. Before we trade him. Please don't go there. Don't go there. All right, let's go to the penalty box. Penalty box, once again, brought to you by Charlie's Coffin Confectionery. We make the bed for the dead. Come check out our affordable prices. They won't put you 6 feet under.
This is such a silly bit, but I love it so much. It's so ridiculous. But I look forward to every time we do one of these, McMahon's going to come with some alliterative genius. And anyway, well done. I'm going to go again a little unorthodox. this is really probably in poor taste, but I'm going Nate Beaulieu. Just kick the guy when he's getting out the door. Like,
all right.
Again, if we're quoting Billy Shakespeare, parting is such sweet sorrow. Shits I give, let's call it zero. Like, I would have driven him to the airport. If he was a nice guy, I know we've talked about this. By all accounts, it doesn't sound like he was. Sounds like he's a bit of a dick. And he did nothing. It varies stat per stat. But there were some metrics that had him as literally the worst NHL defenseman.
I saw that.
This year. And I don't know what Maurice's affinity for him was. And he was even getting some run with Lowry. And the fact that we got more than a bag of pucks for him is fantastic. And most of this is in jest because he's a human being and I wish him well, I guess, but I'm putting you in the penalty box, and then you're getting a season misconduct, you're gone. Sorry, bud.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about him anymore.
He won't be clogging up the penalty box anymore.
We don't have him to kick around anymore.
No.
So I will have a bit of a funny question we'll revisit the issue of Nate Beaulieu in the in-flight entertainment, but for myself, just to prove that I am a fan more so than an analyst, and that this podcast remains all over the place, just like, what do you say, Will Smith, unhinged, like Will Smith on Oscar night.
Don't ever do that again.
I'm putting in the penalty box Dave Lowry. Now, I know I've said a couple nice things about what the coaching staff has done, to some nice moves as recently as the first class assignment. But, I still don't think there's enough accountability. There's too much oh well and not enough oh shit in the Jets game. If they find themselves in the wrong position, they're just kind of like, oh well. There's not enough of a sense of urgency out there in what they're doing. I mean, they're not out of a playoff spot yet. There just doesn't seem to be – everything seems to be very casual out there, especially 5-on-5. This team isn't ready for games emotionally. And yes, they are professional athletes. But I do feel the coach has a role to play in making sure the team is ready to go and plays well early on. It isn't solely or even primarily on the coach, but he's got a sense that they're not starting games well. He needs to do something about that.
The lack of shots in the first period. Was that three games over the past few? Or we go 10 minutes in? Sorry, I interrupted. But yeah,
no, that's a good point. No, you're spot on. I think that as though there has been some small areas of improvement in terms of what this team needs from their coaches, there are still other areas where there's some glaring deficiencies. So, Dave Lowry, you and your Fozzie Bear stuffy can go into the penalty box and feel shame for the next 2 minutes. He does look like Fozzie Bear, doesn't he?
He does a little bit. And the dad from Home Alone. Okay, so we'll do in-flight entertainment.
All right.
Trade deadline special. 5 questions in roughly 5 minutes. Hit us up.
Okay, question number 1. Did we get enough in return for Andrew Copp? Now, we got a second, another second that could turn into the first if the Rangers win 2 series and Andrew Copp dresses for 50% of the game, and a player whose name escapes me, but I hear good things about him. A center, a big center who's playing for the Moose right now.
Barron?
Was that, what's his first name?
You're
right.
That's good podcasting. So
yeah, I meant to write this down.
To answer, so just super quick, the trade deadline was a weird sort of Boeing Max 8 reshuffling of cards, and so there was 5 separate transactions, 7 players and 7 picks kind of changed hands. We got in Appleton, Sanford, and Barron. And then 4 picks, the 2 you alluded to, and then a 2023 third, 2022 seventh, a 2023 fifth. And then out were Copp, Little, Beaulieu, and Smith, and you alluded to Smith earlier. And 3 picks, a fifth and a fourth next year and a sixth next year. So in totality, it's tough to determine. But I was pleased. I don't know about you, but I obviously – we can't stray too far from our comments from our last podcast, because I know I for sure said, oh man, if we can, like, we're never going to get a second. And the fact that we got two, and some of them are conditional and might be first, I thought we acquitted ourselves well on that. And I know our counterpart and the New York podcast, he seems to be the biggest cop supporter and lover there is, which makes me a little remiss. But I thought we got more than market fair value. But I'm not. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, if you operate from the position in which we had to trade Andrew Kopp, which I think is a reasonable one.
Right. Yeah, I do too.
What we got back in return, and I agree, they seem very happy with Andrew Kopp, and I think we're going to miss him. And I think it's a lesson we learned with Mason Appleton. Like, we've had this kind of attrition happening to us, losing these, for lack of a better term, these glue guys that have been strong contributors. Now, that's just part of being in the NHL, and that's going to happen. But getting what we got back, and I really think, and I'm really going to cheer for New York in this upcoming playoff round.
Yeah,
I want them
absolutely.
To win. If we can get a first-rounder, forward Morgan Barron, who's a big guy, 6'4", 225, beast of a guy. Apparently, he came out of Cornell, and he was there with another guy that I think it was Kovacevic or another one of the Moose guys. They were teammates. And I saw an interview the other day, and he was saying how dominant of a player this Morgan Barron would be, and he's a good pickup. And I know that the Rangers fans were a little frustrated with him. They just couldn't work his way into the Rangers lineup. But they're pretty deep at center as well. So this is potentially a longer term, you know, more like an Adam Lowry type guy. Now we're pretty stacked down the middle. I like where that leaves us down the middle. We got Gustafson, who's been dominating.
He's been dominating in the Moose. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have Lowry, we have PLD, we have Scheifele. Now we have Morgan Barron. There's some depth at the center ice position, which I think is really good. So in terms of looking at it just for Andrew Kopp, I do think that I think we got good value. I'm not sure we're going – I think we're going to miss him. I think we're going to miss him in that there wasn't a ready-made solution coming in return for him. It wasn't like a – okay, we let Line A go, but we got PLD in return.
Yeah, I've seen some. Well, we got Appleton, so that's that past few games, I don't mind Appleton's game, but it's not what some are espousing, right? That it's, you know, he can do 85% of what Kopp does and did, and that's remotely true.
No. All right, let's go on to question two.
Okay.
Did the Jets make a mistake in not trading Paul Stastny? You go.
Oh, well, what's Blake Wheeler's happiness worth? Yeah. to your point, I shouldn't say that we couldn't have gotten much for Stastny because I was way off in my prognostications mm-hmm. earlier. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we have an asset. We didn't get anything. It's expiring. I don't think he's going to be around next year. So on that front, sure. Stastny's played well this year.
Yeah.
And he's been a great fill-in guy, and he can move it up and down the lineup. And just for the fact that we've got him for the next 15 games and it's going to make it exciting, I don't think we were getting a first rounder for him. So, no. Or even a second for that matter, maybe a second. But in the mathematical part of my brain is like, yeah, we lost an asset for free.
But
the sort of my heart says, he seems to really like it here. Like, who cares?
You know, if we got a seventh-round draft pick for Nate Beaulieu, like...
Fair. Good point.
You know, but the point is, I think the whole Cole Perfetti not being available possibly affected
that
this.
That hurts. Yeah, you're right. Good call.
I think there's a Blake Wheeler element to this as well. So I don't think that there was necessarily... We didn't need to go out of our way to piss off our captain, even if it is that, which we don't know if it was or wasn't. But, you know, he has been a very good player for us. He is a little older. I think he's 38 years old. So there's probably not a strong market for him. You know, were we really making ourselves better in the short run, medium term, long term? Maybe they have an interest in bringing him back in even a fourth line role next year. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he's the guy that can replace Andrew Kopp. Andrew Kopp was that type of guy that could play up and down and across our lineup, right? He played first, second, third line, even fourth line. Maybe Stastny's that guy for us next year. Maybe we can squeeze one more year out of him. It better not be a 3.75 million.
It better be
bucks.
Not his current price, because that's a ripoff.
Yeah, with the cap only going up $1 million next year, and us having to, you know, pay for PLD on a new contract, I mean, it's going to be tough to find dollars. But was it a mistake? It's only a mistake is if there was a market for him, and we don't know for sure there was a market for him. So I don't think it's the end of the world that he remained the Winnipeg Jet, because I don't think there was no indication there was anywhere close to a strong
market. Yeah.
All right. Next up, can Mason Appleton help the Jets bottom six? Do you want me to go?
Sure. You go ahead.
I think he certainly can. I do think that, even since his return, I think his level of play has been over and above what we've seen from most bottom six players, with the possible exception of Lowry's a very solid bottom six player. I think the only guy outside of Lowry that has played anywhere close to effective hockey this year on a consistent basis has been Dominic Toninato.
The Italian Tornado.
So I do think Mason Appleton can help, because I think some of the other guys that they were hoping that would take a step up
haven't done it.
Haven't.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think the familiarity aspect is there, and I think that that's good. I think he comes in and he knows people in the room, and it's an easier fit and acclimation process. And they were apparently trying to acquire him for some time prior to the trade deadline.
I don't think we wanted to get rid of him in the first place.
No. I do think it was, you know,
the right move.
I don't think it could have been avoided, but. Or it would have cost too much to avoid, you know, if we had to pay to keep him, give up draft picks or whatever. But yeah, I do think he can help our bottom six. What do you think, Mike?
I think, okay, so first of all, low-hanging fruit on the do you like apples joke. So that's great for our podcast. So I'm always a fan of that.
How do you like them apples?
Absolutely.
And I think their moves spoke volumes about what they think about our bottom six forwards. I think they've correctly assessed that the guys that we've been bringing up from the Moose and Harkins and just a number of these guys, we've given quite a long look to Vesalainen went down, that they just haven't worked out. And I think that they thought, okay, well, let's reset and retool. And I 100% agree with it. Like, he becomes our second best forward on our bottom six next to Lowry. So anytime you can acquire that for not nothing, but relatively nothing, then I think it's a good move. And I like his game. He's not spectacular, mm-hmm. but he's better than we had. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think immediately he's everything that they hoped Jensen Harkins would be. I mean, he's...
There you
he's
go.
Out
There's
there.
The comparison.
He's not Tanev, right? But he's closer to Tanev. And Harkins needs to be this somewhat of a physical presence, a pesky, high energy guy, and we're just not getting that out of him. And I think that with Appleton's speed, he can make himself noticeable around the ice
yep.
in more ways than one. All right, next question.
All right.
Reportedly, Jets prospect Nathan Smith, who's a center who plays at the University of Minnesota Duluth, I think,
mm-hmm.
Wasn't going to sign with the Jets. Therefore, he was part of the trade that went with Brian Little to Arizona. Were the Jets right to trade such a prospect? And he was a very well-regarded prospect. Were the Jets right to trade him? And, okay, so here's so if we weren't sure whether he was going to fit into our lineup, we traded him. So now I'm looking back on Ville Heinola. I'm looking back on the Nick Batans of the world. I'm looking back on the Sammy Nikus of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have we finally learned our lesson is maybe what this question should be.
Yes. With a caveat, I hope so. Because that's what it seemed like, and that's what the reporting was, is that, it, you know, every indication that he wasn't going to sign or play with the Jets, then bye-bye. And so that's one thing. That's sort of a player forced. But, you know, I think some of our past indiscretions have been we fool ourselves into thinking, well, at some point, if we just keep these folks around, we're gonna they're gonna work their way up the lineup. But we never had the coaching staff that wanted to develop so that they could move up the lineup. And at that stage, we should have cut bait and said, look, if we're just gonna have them mired down on the Moose for 3 years and sit in the press box for 17 games, what are we doing? Let's get let's get value for this asset. So I'm hoping that this is a trend that will continue. That, you know, you don't want to be here? Great. See you later. Hey, we're not using you, utilizing you to your max potential, and you have more value out in the trade market? Great. See you later. Like, let's get a little more calculated with this. And so I hope that's the start of this.
I agree. And that's been my frustration. Far more over and above whether we should be playing Ville Heinola or not is just the not doing anything with these guys. If they don't fit into it, listen, you draft talent and develop them best you can. If they don't fit into where you are at the time, then trade them for something that does. And the Jets have been reluctant, almost refusing to do that. Now, here was an example, just as you indicated. A guy said, listen, I don't think I fit into your plans. You're super deep at center. I don't see myself on the big club in the next couple years. I'm not signing with you. Boom, move them out. They get some cash relief. There is a cap element to moving Brian Little's contract out, but they also literally don't have to pay him the cash. So that's like $10 million.
No, that's close.
$9 million. They don't have to actually pay. Someone's paying Brian Little. Brian Little's not losing $9 million.
No, but tip of the cap to Brian Little too, right? Just he had a good
absolutely
because
he. And he could he doesn't care who's signing his checks.
No,
he,
as long as he's getting them.
He's earned them, and good for him for waving his no.
Yeah, he did us a solid too, right?
Absolutely. So yeah, I do think it was I think we were right to move him. All right, last question, bit of a fun one. Was trading Nate Beaulieu at the trade deadline the greatest thing the Jets could have done to improve the team, and why is the answer yes?
I love questions that have already been answered for me. I do really well on those exams. So I'm going to step aside. I'll cede my floor to you, sir. I've let my feelings known, and I have a tinge of regret that I'm kicking a guy on his way out. But I just put succinctly, he's a terrible hockey player. He never should have been on our roster. So to get a seventh rounder for him, fantastic.
Well, it's just crazy what we went through in that period of time where it was back and forth between him and Stanley, and you know, maybe the next discussion we're having is, you know, we're going to have to have long, difficult conversations about Pionk and Dylan and Schmidt.
Yeah.
And because Ville Heinola might be the third best defender on this team,
and we're not paying him $6 or $4 million, right? Like, that's a lot of cap space that could be freed up. And I don't Heinola, his play, albeit small sample size, is, to your point, he's better than those guys. I'm a bit biased, so I recognize that, but no need to pay, you know, Schmidt $6 million for what he provides, even Pionk to that matter. So
great,
yeah, couldn't agree more
though.
He's a great interviewer. Great. So was Maurice. Congrats.
Yeah, but Maurice is he was kind of smarmy, like, I'm smarter than all of you dirty villagers. But, you know, Nate Schmidt's just a happy guy.
So, super quick, question 5A. What have you thought of Sanford play thus far? Because it's another pop culture Sanford and Son. Reference, and again, I'm all on it on this, but we haven't talked about this. I'm interested to see what you thought his play has been like.
I purposely avoided writing his name anywhere in my notes because I haven't been impressed, to be honest. And I don't even know if there's much there. There's been a few. He just seems very lackadaisical at times.
Not a great sense of urgency. He does seem to have good hands for a bigger guy and a bottom six guy. He has made a few in tight, close plays. He doesn't panic with the puck, which I think a lot of our bottom six tend to do. Like, I think it's been ingrained in them to just keep dumping it, running after it and dumping it. Like, you can tell he's got some skill. You know, Paulie Walnut seemed to really like him. It's just, he's obviously, for a big guy, he's not very fast. And he's not very aggressive, so I don't really know what he is. Like, get Veselainen back in. We can get somebody else to be invisible. So jury's still out, but I kind of felt the same way.
Yeah, you know, prior to the season, we were looking at our third line being Kopp, Lowry, and potentially Stastny. And that was going to be a pretty good third line. And now we're looking at, you know, Sanford, Lowry, and Appleton. So I don't think that third line has been great. I don't think it's been bad. It hasn't been great. But, yeah, I think the jury's out. I think it was clear coming out of the deadline, as we mentioned, the Jets were not happy with their bottom six. I think, you know, it's tough. The results have been there recently. The process hasn't. I don't think that line has been great. The jury's out on Sanford, which is a very polite way of saying, I don't like what I've seen, but I hope it'll improve.
No, agree. Okay, quick last call.
All right, so who do we got coming up? We're recording on Tuesday the 29th, so you're probably listening to this, of course, bright and early on Wednesday the 30th. So we're playing in Buffalo on Wednesday, March 30th, and then a quick back-to-back in Toronto the next night on Thursday, March 31st. So that's going to be tough. Back home on Saturday against the LA Kings. And then a few days off and a bit of a homestand. We got three in a row at home. So after LA on Saturday, we got Wednesday against Detroit. And then Friday night, IPA eye test, Friday against Colorado. So that's a 7 p.m. start. Vaughn's drinking, 2:15.
Jets are down 4-0 after first.
Jets are already down. Yeah, they're already down.
By 2:15, the game hasn't even started.
Yeah, they're already down. So, yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a mixed bag of games. You know, very winnable games against Detroit, who lost 11-2 the other night.
Detroit
and Buffalo. Tough games against Colorado and Toronto. And, you know, a competitive one. A team, you know, let's say we're at home, we should get the edge. So, you know, I'm looking maybe 3-2 coming out of that five-game stretch. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, that's what I had it as. I think, you know, Colorado, I don't want to be too pessimistic, but that to me is a kind of an auto L.
Well, Nathan MacKinnon's hurt, so.
Yeah, I get there's just, I don't know what it is about that team, but they play us just really, really tough. And, you know, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic at 3-2. But again, you know, as I said earlier, we need to be better than 3-2, right? Like, mm-hmm. we got to go 4-1 the rest of the way in these five game stints, playoff team or no. So, but I'm not going to guess that, that's for sure.
Yeah, beyond that, we got a game against Florida. We got Tampa. We got Carolina.
I know. Yeah.
We got some Rangers with their great goaltending. We got Colorado again. Calgary. Oh, it's going to be a tough month. Anyways, so my goodness. It'll be an interesting month. Here's the push. Let's have some fun and let's sign off.
Absolutely.
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Faceoff Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast podcasts. Be sure to come back here next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go. Can't sit, gotta get jiggy with it. That's it, the honey, honey, come ride. TKNY, all up in my eyes. You got a rider, bag with a lot of stuff in it. Give it to your friend, let's spin. Everybody looking at me, glancing at the kid. Wishing they was dancing a jig here with this handsome kid. Sick a cigar right from Cuba Cuba. Just bite it, it's for the look, I don't light it. It'll wait to AMA on the hand, stay role play. Give it up, jiggy, make it feel like foreplay. Yo, my cardio is infinite. Big Willie Styles all in it.